If you have your Bible tonight, let's turn to the book of Genesis. The book of Genesis, chapter number, will be in 16 and number 21. And to you men in that class, thank you very much. It takes all of us, not just in this church, but in within the church of Christ, the body of Christ, to make things work. He gives some people money to give. We have the time. And I really appreciate you men that had the money that you giving that from the bottom of my heart. I really appreciate that. We will be reading all of chapter 16 and all of chapter number 21 in Genesis. I don't like reading that much text, but I think it will be a good refresher for us for this story, this time in Abraham's life. When the preacher says you're familiar with the story of so-and-so or the text of so-and-so, when a lot of people who are there really aren't. And just some people who I've met and just recently, it shocked me when they said, well, I have never heard that before. But we'll begin reading in verse number 1 of chapter number 16 of Genesis. And the Bible says, now Sarai, Abram's wife, bare him no children, and she had an handmaid, an Egyptian, to my maid. It may be that I may obtain children by her. And Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarai, and Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife. And he went in unto Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. And Sarai said unto Abram, my wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid Sarai. Behold, thy maid is in thy hand. Do to her as it pleaseth thee. And when Sarai dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face. And the angel of the Lord found her by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way to Shur. And he said, Hagar, Sarai's maid, whence camest thou, and whither wilt thou go? And she said, I flee from the face of my mistress Sarai. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, return to the mistress and submit thyself unto her hands. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, I will multiply thy seed exceedingly, that it shall not be numbered for multitude. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, behold, thou art with child, and shalt bear a son, and shalt call his name Ishmael, because the Lord hath heard thy affliction. And he will be a wild man, his hand will be against every man, and every man's hand against him. And he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. And she called the name of the Lord that spake unto her, thou God seest to me. For she said, have I also here looked after him that seeth me? And wherefore the well was called Bered Lahai Roi. Behold, it is between Kadesh and Bered. And Hagar bare Abram a son, and Abram called his son's name, which Hagar bare, Ishmael. And Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bare Ishmael to Abraham. And then flip over to chapter number 21, if you will. It says, and the Lord visited Sarah, as he had said, and the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. For Sarah conceived and bare Abraham a son in his old age, at the set time of which God had spoken to him. And Abraham called the name of his son that was born unto him, whom Sarah bare to him, Isaac. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac, being 8 days old, as God had commanded him. And Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born unto him. And Sarah said, God hath made me to laugh, so that all will laugh with me. And she said, who would have said unto Abraham that Sarah should have given children suck? For I have borne him a son in his old age. And the child grew and was weaned. And Abraham made a great feast the same day that Isaac was weaned. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, which she had borne unto Abraham, mocking. And this will be our text for tonight, what we're coming up upon. Wherefore she said unto Abraham, cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. And the thing was very grievous in Abram's sight because of his son. And God said unto Abraham, let it not be grievous in thy sight because of the lad, and because of thy bondwoman. And all that Sarah hath said unto thee, hearken unto her voice. For in Isaac shall thy seed be called. And also of the son of the bondwoman will I make a nation, because he is thy seed. And Abraham rose up early in the morning, and took bread and a bottle of water, and gave it unto Hagar, putting it on her shoulder and the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba.
And the water was spent in the bottle, and she cast the child under one of the shrubs, and she went and sat her down over against him a good way off, as it were a bow shot. For she said, let me not see the death of the child. And she sat over against him and lifted up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the lad, and the angel of God called to Hagar out of heaven and said unto her, what aileth thee, Hagar? Fear not, for God hath heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad and hold him in thine hand, for I will make him a great nation. And God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the bottle with water and gave the lad drink. And God was with the lad, and he grew and dwelt in the wilderness and became an archer. And he dwelt in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took him a wife out of the land of Egypt. Tonight, I want to preach on the thought, the very simple thought of hold on to your bottle. Hold on to your bottle tonight. Now, just as an introduction to Abraham's life, when you read the previous chapters in Genesis, in number 12, you will find the coming out of Abraham. When God calls Abraham out of the land that he's in to sojourn in the land that it says he'll show him, where he tells him that everywhere your foot touches, the sole of your foot, it will be yours one day. Your seed, your line will inherit it one day. And in chapter number 13, we find the going out of Abraham, when Abraham and Lot, when they have lived together and they've sojourned together for a short time, and they have amassed so much wealth that the land can no longer contain both of their families. And so they go out and they separate out together, and Lot takes the well-watered plains, and he goes towards Sodom and Gomorrah, and Abraham goes the opposite direction. And then in chapter number 14, we see the getting out, where Abraham, he goes and he delivers his nephew Lot. Lot is taken into captivity by kings of the land. And so Abraham, he takes just a few small band of men, and he goes and he takes his nephew back out of that captivity. And in chapter number 15, we see the calling out of Abraham. We see when God signified and solidified his calling on Abraham's life, when up until this point, Abraham and Sarah had no children. And so God promised him, he said that you won't be able to number the offspring that you're going to have. You look at the sand on the seashore, and that's how many you're going to have. You look up in the heavens and see the stars, and if you can number them, that's how many you're going to have. But when we come to chapter 16 and number 21 in our text, we find where Hagar, she's been cast out. And four brief points, and I'll be done on simply hang on to your bottle. Number one, hang on to your bottle when you're in a strange land. See, what land was Hagar in when she was there? Well, you see, Hagar, she was an Egyptian woman. You see, Abraham, he likely got Hagar back in chapter number 12, when Abraham, he had to go down into Egypt because there was a famine in the land. And he had his wife Sarah lie to Pharaoh to tell Pharaoh that she was his sister instead of his wife. Because Abraham was afraid that Pharaoh would take her if she was his wife. And so he lies to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh, he suffers many things in a dream. And God tells him that that's Abraham's wife. You don't need to mess with her. And so Pharaoh, he calls Abraham to him, and he asks him why he lied to him. And Abraham tells him why. And so he sends him away. And so he sends him with cattle and with possessions and people and slaves from the land of Egypt. So Hagar, she likely came out of Egypt. So Hagar, while she is a picture of the world coming from Egypt, she is in a strange land at the moment. See, Hagar, she didn't look like the other people. She didn't talk like the other people. She didn't act like the other people. See, she looked different. Egyptians didn't have the same hair color as the Jewish people. Egyptians didn't have the same skin tone as the Jewish people. Egyptians didn't have the same features as the Jewish people. They didn't think the same way. They didn't act the same way. There was nothing similar about Hagar and the Jewish people. Also, she would have had different rituals, different customs than the Jewish people than they would have done. Hagar didn't know anything about serving the living God. Hagar didn't know anything about Abraham when he would go to an altar and make a sacrifice, or when he would pray, or when he would try to intercede for his nephew Lot with God when he was going to rain fire and brimstone down Sodom and Gomorrah. Thank you. See, she was different. But just like Hagar, we're all different. We all live in a strange land, but we need to hang on to our bottle while we're in that strange land. But you see, just like Hagar, we should talk different, and we should act different, just like Hagar did too. Now, don't get tight on me already. I can tell you already are. Don't get nervous when people talk about acting different or being separated from the world, because that's how we're supposed to be as Christians. It's okay to be separated. It shouldn't make us nervous. But we should talk different, first of all. You see, Hagar, she talked different than the Jewish people did. She talked different than Abraham did. We should talk different too. When we go down to the job, we should be talking different. We shouldn't sound like the world does. We shouldn't be taking part of the conversations that the world does. When the world talks, just the other day at my job, someone was talking about, they came in and they were talking to me about how they went out drinking the night before. And they were telling me the different drinks that they had had. And when they walked out, I had to say to one of my coworkers, what were they talking about? I don't drink. I don't understand. And my coworker looked at me like I just hit him with a 2x4. Because we're different, they don't understand. That's how the reaction should be. There should be a strange look when we talk differently, because there should be something different about us. Just when we go to school, I know it's youth service, there's not that many youth here, but when we go to school or we go to college, we should talk differently also. And no, not having a funny dialect and a funny accent because we're from the mountains, but you should talk different. When you go into class, the kids, they should know that there's something different about you. Like, why are all these cuss words not coming out of your mouth? Why are you not talking about what you did last night? Whoever you went out with, or whoever you slept with, or whatever you watched on the internet the night before, whatever it is, you should be talking different. There'd be something different about you. But she acted differently too. Just like we should act differently. We should act differently with the way that we dress, number one. Hello? Don't tighten up on me now. I'm not telling you anything that's not biblically correct or anything that's weird. We should dress differently. I'm not saying that we need to walk around with a three-piece suit all the time and that we need to walk around with dresses down to our ankles. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying we need to dress modestly when we go out somewhere. That's what I'm saying. Now, whatever your definition, everyone's definition of modesty is different, and that's fine. Whatever your personal conviction with the Lord is, I'm not going to judge you for it. I'm not going to sit here and tell you you have to wear dresses down to your ankles. I've heard people say that. I don't agree with that. Biblically, I don't think that there's anything in there that you can back that up with. But if that's your personal conviction, that's fine. But we should be dressing modestly. And like when we go down to the beach, some people just went to the beach. I go to the beach. I like going to the beach. But when we go to the beach, we should dress modestly there too. Our modesty standards shouldn't drop just because we're not at home where someone might see us when they know where we go to church at. Just because we're walking down, and I'm just using the beach as an example because it's the easiest example to use because that's where people wear the least clothing. But when we go to the beach, and I'm not trying to pick on you ladies, but just when you go down there, like, you don't have to show everything off to everybody. I mean, you can wear modest swimsuits. My wife wears modest swimsuits. There's nothing wrong with wearing a swimsuit, but just do it modestly. Amen, preacher. And for us too, like us guys, if it's your conviction to wear pants at the beach, that's fine. I wear shorts at the beach, but I wear a t-shirt because I don't want to show everybody all that. Nobody wants to see all that. I mean, let's be honest. But I'm serious though. Like, why do the standards we have, why do they change when our settings and our surroundings change? You see, Hagar, while she was a picture of the world, she was a lost person at first. She was more than likely true to her convictions because that's how she was raised. So when we're put in a different setting and we're put in a different environment, if we're a young person, we go to college or when we go get a job and get our mom and dad's house, like our standards shouldn't change. If they do, they should increase, if anything. I mean, it's the truth of the matter. Like, people should, they should look, when we walk down the street, they should look, kind of look at us funny, like, why are you dressed like that? And you can, by the way, you can be fully dressed and still be immodest. Like, it's not just like if you're a guy and you're wearing blue jeans and a t-shirt, like, you can wear something immodest on your t-shirt. Or like, if your pants are really hanging low, nobody wants to see that. That's immodest. Have some respect for yourself and for Christ. I'm going to get off of this in a second, but something I'm sick. They are wonderful. They dress great. They are the best kids in the world. And I'm not just saying that. We love your kids, but I am sick and tired of every time I go there that I have to stick my head down and look at the floor when some girl gets up to sing because she's fully dressed, but it's skin tight. Like I can see every roll and curve that she's got. She's fully clothed, but it's still immodest. I mean, but that's something that's lost on us. But we throw that bottle away that Christ gave us for just something temporal when we're in a strange land, when we should hang on to that bottle living in a strange land, and we should act differently in that strange land with that bottle. That bottle signifies that we're different because that bottle is Christ. But secondly, and I'll move on, we should hang on to that bottle when we're in a sticky situation. See, what sticky situation do you see? Well, it's a pretty bad one in the life of Abraham and Sarah. And this conflict is between Abraham and Sarah and the Lord. And the conflict is that God promised them a child. He promised Abraham a seed, but he hasn't delivered on it yet. That doesn't mean God's not going to deliver on it. He just hasn't delivered on it yet because he didn't want to yet, because it was a scheme of how they're going to help God out. And so they have this conflict between them, and they don't understand why God isn't solving their problem. And so faced with this conflict, they conceive this plan. And we, from reading the text, we know the plan is that they decide that Hagar is going to be the surrogate mother, basically. It doesn't work that way now. It didn't work that way back then. That was not God's will. But so they go through with this, and when from reading the text, Hagar, when she becomes pregnant, she gets a haughty spirit about her. What would you expect from someone who's from the world? She gets an ignorant, mean spirit about her towards Sarah, and she starts, the problem was with Sarah and not Abraham. And so Abraham, he does what, I guess, what any man would do. He decides just to give Hagar back to Sarah and to tell her that, you know, you can do what you want with her. And so Sarah's going back to Egypt. When you study geographically, sure, however it's pronounced, that's just about as close to Egypt as you could get without being back in Egypt. She was going back to her old life. See, when we're faced with a conflict and we're faced with a problem, the solution is not to turn around and go back to where we came from. The solution is not to go back to the world. The solution is not to go to Hagar. She's running away from everything, because that's what we do. We run away, because if I run away far enough and fast enough, the problem is just going to disappear and it's going to vanish. There's going to be no further issues with it. But while she's there, she runs into God. Shocker, right? Like when we start to run away from God, we usually run smack into him. When we're trying to get as far away from him as we can, usually we get even closer to him than what we expected to get. And so he tells Hagar that you're going to have a son, and he's going to be the father of, you know, lots of people, just like Isaac as well, because he's from Abraham's seed. But he tells her that he's going to be a wild man. Everyone's going to be against him. He's going to be against everyone. We know that that's modern day Israel versus the rest of the world, basically the Middle East. But she has to go back, and she eventually has to face everyone. God tells her to go back, and she goes back and she submits herself to Abraham and to Sarah. That's a really hard thing for her to do, I would imagine. It's a hard thing for us to do, but it's a lesson we can learn from Hagar. Is that the best and the only way to solve a situation is to go back to the situation. But you see, when they had that conflict and they came up with that, conceived that plan, there was consequences to it as well. You see, those consequences is that we have the modern day issues that we have in the world with Israel and with the Middle East. But also, you see, Abraham, the consequences for Abraham, he replaced what God had gave him with what the world gave him. See, God gave him Sarah, and God was going to give him a son. But instead, he took an Egyptian slave girl servant in exchange for what God gave him. See, the name Sarah, it means princess. And the name Hagar, it means flight. So he exchanged the princess for someone who was going to be a flight risk on them. All because he was trying to help God out. So you see, Abraham has caused, and Sarah has caused themselves lots of issues. They've put themselves in a sticky situation. But how this can relate to us is, you know, we face conflicts every single day. Many of them, we put ourselves in those situations for things. We do just like Abraham and Sarah. We want God to answer a prayer or to do something for us just like that right away, when it might not be his will to right away. And so we try to help him out. And we always get ourselves in a bad situation. We conceive these grand schemes, these grand ideas. You know, we try to convince ourselves, oh, if I do this, then it'll be okay. I'll help God out. God, he's busy helping so-and-so over there. So I just need to give him a little help. He needs some help. I can handle it. I'm okay. I know what I'm doing. We all know how it turns out because we all do it. We're all human. We're just like Abraham and Sarah. But the problem with Abraham and Sarah, part of it is the position of their relationship together. And I'm not trying to step on any toes here. I promise you, I'm just trying to point out that some of the errors in the way that they lived. You see, Sarah, she had a great influence over Abraham. She really did. Because you think about it, Sarah is the one that initiated all this. Sarah is the one that brought up the idea. Sarah is the one that said, here, take Hagar. She's the one that said, Abraham, I can't give you a child, so let me help you and help God out. And Abraham, he says, okay. Abraham was being a stupid man. He was being a stupid, ignorant man. Because many times that's how we are. You see, it should have been the opposite. You see, when Sarah, when she told him those things, Abraham should have stood up and he should have been the man of the house and had the respect and love for her as the bride of Christ. Like we're supposed to love our wives and love women the way that Christ loves the church. And said, no, honey, like it's okay. We're not going to do that. We're going to trust God. We're going to listen to God. We're going to believe God. We're going to wait on God. Instead, he was a sinful, fleshly man. And that's the problem with so many of our households today is no offense to anyone, but so many times the women run the house. And it's a co-equal thing. Y'all don't look at me like I'm crazy. I can tell some of y'all just spitting fire at me. It's a co-equal thing. The men and the women, we're equal parts. We make one with Christ. But biblically, it says the woman's supposed to be submissive to the husband, but the husband is supposed to love Christ, love her as Christ loves the church. It's a co-equal thing. But that's why so many of our families are messed up today, is because the wife runs the house, the husband is off running around with his mistress, and the kids are going to hell. I promise you, all of these kids, when we go to camps and we talk to them, and we introduce ourselves to different kids and learn different kids' names and just get to know them, most of the time the kids that come from a broken home are the ones where the dad has ran off and the woman is supposed to be the nurturer, the lover, the one that keeps the family together, the one that takes care of the kids, the one that loves. And so many men today in America don't want to lead the family, and so that's why we have so many issues. Amen. It's the truth. But thirdly, back in chapter number 16 and verses 7 through 14, we won't read it again, but it's when she runs away for the first time. See, God, he speaks to her by the fountain on the way to Shur when she's running back to Egypt. Oh, and the fountain where she's in the wilderness at, the children of Israel in Exodus, they spend 3 days there and they never find any water at that well. So that's where she's running to. That's where she's at. She's in a very dry place. She's in a place where she has literally hit a wall and there's no water for her anywhere around. But she gets a word while she's there. You see, God tells her to return back to where she came from, and he tells her that your seed won't be able to be numbered. And he tells her that his name will be called Ishmael, which means God hears, because God heard her. And so there, she gives God a name, and she names God, Thou God seest me. She says, God, you have seen me here when I hit this wall, when there is no water around for my soul, when there's no water around for my physical body. You've seen me, and you've heard me, and you've answered me. And that well that's called Bari Lahai-Roi, it means the well of him that liveth and seeth me. So she's running off into the wilderness, and as she's going back, she can hang on to the bottle she's got because she's gotten a word from the Lord. But later on in the text, when she actually has her bottle, what if she wasn't hanging on to it? She had a word from the Lord, but she just left the bottle behind. Because that's what we do. We're just like her. When we get in bad situations, we run the opposite direction. We run the other way. And we run into a wall. And many times, whenever we run into it, we don't like that wall. Because we think that wall is keeping us from getting away from our problem. When all along, if we could look on the other side of the wall, God's probably put that wall up there to keep us from getting in an even worse situation. Because he's trying to help us because we're stupid, fleshly, sinful people. Because we don't listen to God so many times. We don't follow God's directions and we try to help God out. So when we get to that place, when we run to those walls, so many times I've been there before. I'm sure many of y'all have before, when I don't know where I'm going or what's going on, and it doesn't seem like there's any water around, and you seem like you're just about to perish, and you feel like every time that you make a turn, you hit a wall, you get a word from Him. And when we get that word, so many times that we forget about what He said to us just a little while later. You see, it's easy for us to have the faith and to hang on to something that someone else has got. Like when someone testifies about God healing them from some cancer or some other serious issue, or about God meeting some financial need they have, or about God giving them a house or a car or saving a child or a parent or somebody, it's easy for us to believe God can do it and will do it. But when it comes to us, when we've had a word, when He spoke a word in our hearts, it's really hard for us to hang on to it. And so we leave that bottle behind and we forget about that bottle that He gave us. But fourthly and lastly, we should hang on to our bottle. And she hung on to her bottle so that the Savior could fill it. Now this bottle, it was not a bottle like this. This was not the bottle Hagar had. She did not have a camelback like people have that go backpacking a lot. She didn't have a water cooler like you'll see on the back of a work truck. She didn't have anything like that. So what was her bottle made of? Well, I'm glad you asked. Her bottle was made of lambskin. Hello. You see, what they did, they would have took a lamb, and I don't know if they killed it just for this purpose or if it was for a sacrifice, but regardless, they killed a lamb, and they skinned the lamb out, and they tanned the hide, and they fleshed the hide, however they did it back then, and then they would sew it together, and that was their bottle. Now, we know that the lamb is the picture of Christ. So they were literally carrying around a representation of Jesus with them. That's what she was carrying around. She was carrying the Son of God around with her. But so at this point, Hagar, she is saved. She's a saved person. She goes to heaven later. But so she's saved. But if she would have left that bottle behind, she couldn't have done very much, though, could she? If she had no bottle, she couldn't stray farther than just a day's journey from whatever water source that she had, right? She couldn't go more than a day without, I mean, you can go a couple days without water, but you're not going to go more than a day without starting to have serious problems. And so if she would have left that bottle behind, if she would have just dropped it off and left it there in the desert in the dust, she would have died. But instead she hung on to that bottle. So that when she went from well to well to well to well while she was in the wilderness with her son, she could still live and survive and thrive. You see, she didn't faint on her journey. She didn't lose hope. She didn't die on her journey because she held on to her bottle. She held on to Christ. And yes, she was saved regardless, but she was filled. She lived a fulfilled and a purposeful life because she could fill that bottle with water from God. But, you see, carrying that bottle, it always made sure that He was with her, but what it also allowed her to do was it allowed her to always be refreshed and revived and constantly thriving to help someone else so she could help her son. Her number one priority, her number one joy in her life at that time. And we're just like Hagar. If we're saved, we're carrying around a lambskin bottle with us. It's not an external physical bottle, but it's an internal bottle. It's when Christ comes and lives inside of us and dwells in our heart if we're saved. And so regardless of what we do, if you're saved, you're saved. You're going to go to heaven. But that's only the first step. If we throw away our bottle, we have nothing left to give. We have nothing left to receive. If we throw away our bottle, we can't get anywhere. Let's pretend that this church building, that it's the well where Hagar was at. If we throw away our bottle, we can never leave this place, right? Because we can never journey farther than a day's journey to come back and get water. But we can't live here. We're only here a couple of times a week at the most. And so we have to hang on to our bottle so that God can keep filling it up. And fill it up through reading His Word at home, praying, listening to preaching or singing whenever we go somewhere down the road or at home, whatever it is, it's up to us to hang on to it so that He can fill it. Because it's important for us to be filled. Because we should worry about making sure our spiritual needs are satisfied. But other than that, we should worry about other people also. Because it does no good if I'm too weak to go and help someone else. Just like for your physical needs, if you were going to go and help someone move something, or if you're going to go help on a construction site, if you don't have a lot of rest, if you haven't ate properly, if you don't have the right energy, you're going to be no use to that person. And so it's the same way with God. If we haven't fed ourselves and watered ourselves spiritually by hanging on to our bottle, not letting go of God, we're not going to be of any use to anyone else.
Let me give you this and I'll be done. Back in 1956, there was a woman named Elizabeth Elliot. Some of y'all may have heard of her, some of y'all may have not, but you'll learn about her right now. She had a husband whose name was Jim. And Elizabeth's calling in life, she says, she just died about 7 or 8 years ago. Her calling in life, she said, was to go be a missionary. And when she was in college, she studied Greek so that she could later translate the Bible into some unknown native language to her at the time. So in the mid-1950s, her and her husband and several other people went to Ecuador. And they were going to visit a native tribe that lived down there that had very little to no outside human contact with the regular civilization, regular world. While they were there, her husband and four other men were speared to death. While they're on a mission trip serving God, doing what God wanted them to do, her husband was killed. So what would most of us have done? If it had been me, I would have turned my back on God more than likely and never had anything to do with him again, because that would hurt me deeply and wound me deeply. Y'all pray for me. I'm just being honest. I'm just being human. But instead of doing that, what did she do? Just shortly after that, Elizabeth Elliot went back there to the same tribe, to the same people that had killed her husband, and she went and witnessed to them. And for 2 or 3 years, she lived among those people. The people who had murdered her husband. She went back and shared the gospel with them. How does that relate to us? In Elizabeth's life, Elizabeth Elliot's life, she was faced with several things. First, she was in a strange land. She was born in Europe, moved to America just as an infant, and lived her whole life in America. So going from America to Ecuador, that's a strange land, right? They talked differently. She had to learn their native language. They dressed differently. Most of them were running around naked or with very little clothing on. They acted completely differently from American civilization. And then she was faced with a conflict, the worst conflict any of us could probably ever imagine. Her husband's killed. And so then she could have conceived this great plan of how she was going to run away from God or how she was going to have these people killed to get back at them. But instead she does the opposite. And so there's no consequences for her. And the reason that she reacted the way that she did is because that she had a word from the Lord. You see, she hit a wall when her husband died. That's about the biggest wall you could ever hit, is having someone killed in front of your own eyes. She hits a wall and she's in the most dry and desolate place that she can get to. But instead of turning around and trying to run back like Hagar was doing, like we do, she turned around and kept on going. She was holding on to that bottle that God had given her. She was holding on to that salvation that had been given to her. She was holding on to what she knew was the truth that would overcome all the sin that was in that village's life. And she overcame all that. She held on to that bottle. And she kept that bottle so that God could fill that bottle again so that she could help somebody else. We need to hang on to our bottle. I believe the reason that we fail so many times as Americans and in individual churches to have true God heaven sent revival is because half of us have thrown our bottles away already. For those of us who are saved, most of us here on a Sunday night, most of us probably are saved. I don't know, but we're here, we're content, we're saved, I'm going to heaven, my family's saved, I'm good, my grandkids are saved, whatever. And so I don't need this bottle anymore. And that's what we do, we throw it in the garbage can.
You can't fill an empty vessel if there's no vessel there. And I'm not preaching at you. I'm preaching to myself as well, because I throw my bottle away all the time. And I have to go pick it back up out of the trash and pick it back up again. But hanging on to that bottle is what we need to do. Hanging on to that bottle is how we have a thriving, how we thrive as individual Christians. It's how we thrive as an individual church. It's how we thrive as a body of Christ. It's hanging on to that bottle. If Elizabeth Elliot could hang on to her bottle, surely we could. Surely. Pastor, I'm done.